You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 178, in Rudolf Steiner's Collected Works, his lectures on Secret Brotherhoods and the Mystery of the Human Double. This translated by Joanna Collis. This is the fifth lecture given in Dornach on the 18th of November 1917. I will mention that this lecture and the two after it were originally published years ago in a book called The Wrong and Right Use of Esoteric Knowledge. So if you've ever read those, these are those lectures. This is the fifth lecture in the book, and in this case it's entitled Individual Spirit Beings and the Constant Foundation of the Universe, Part 1. You will remember our considerations regarding various claims and assertions made nowadays by psychoanalysts. My intention was to show that the concept of the unconscious, as defined by psychoanalysis, lacks foundation. So long as psychoanalysts cannot get beyond this totally negative concept of the unconscious, we shall have to stand by our statement that psychoanalysis is using inadequate tools for its work on a phenomenon which it is important to work on today. Nevertheless, since the psychoanalysts do indeed endeavor to research the spirit-soul element and also follow up this spirit-soul element in the social realm, one cannot but grant that their efforts represent a more significant effort than that achieved in this realm by official academic science. However, since efforts are also underway to bring analytical psychology into everyday life through education, through therapy, and soon probably also through social politics, the dangers involved must give rise to some concern. So let us ask, what is it that today's researchers are unable but also unwilling to get to grips with? They recognize that there is a soul element which lies outside consciousness. Indeed, they seek to find the soul element that is outside consciousness. But they cannot make the effort to recognize the spirit itself. Spirit can never in any way be encompassed by the concept of the unconscious, for an unconscious spirit would be like a human being without a head. I have pointed out to you that in certain states of hysteria, there are people who can go about in the street and see only the body but not the head of other people. Not seeing anyone's head is a specific kind of illness. Similarly, amongst today's researchers, there are some who think they are seeing the whole spirit. But by presenting it as something unconscious, they show that they themselves are victims of the illusion that there would be an unconscious spirit, a spirit without consciousness, if we were to step across the threshold of consciousness, either in the right sense, as we always do, on the basis of spiritual scientific research, or in a pathological, abnormal way, which is always the case with patients who are treated by psychoanalysts. When we step across the threshold of consciousness, we always enter a realm of spirit. Whether it is subconscious or superconscious, it is always a realm of spirit. A realm in which the spirit is conscious in one way or another, in one form or another. Where there is spirit, there is consciousness. All we have to do is find out what conditions the conscious... Read that again. All we have to do is find out what conditions the consciousness is subject to. Spiritual science, in particular, gives us the possibility of recognizing which kind of consciousness a particular form of spirituality has. Last week we talked of a woman leaving a social gathering and then running away from horses and having to be prevented from jumping into a river before being brought back to the house she had just left in order there to be brought together with the host because she was in love with him in some unclear subconscious way. It cannot be said in such a case that the spirit of which the woman is not conscious, but which is urging and leading her on, is an unconscious spirit, nor that it is an unconscious soul element. No, it is something very conscious. The demonic spirit who leads the woman back to the man whom she loves in an improper way is actually much cleverer in its consciousness than is the woman herself in her upper story, by which I mean her consciousness. When we step across the threshold of consciousness in some way, the spirits who move about there are not unconscious spirits. They are spirits who are conscious in the way they move about and get active. The term unconscious spirit, as used by psychoanalysts, is meaningless. I might just as easily, seeing things from my point of view, regard this whole illustrious gathering sitting here as my unconscious if I knew nothing about it. It would be equally wrong to call the spiritual beings who are around us, and who in cases like the one mentioned seize hold of the person, unconscious spirits. They are subconscious, they are not grasped by the consciousness that happens to be in us at that moment, but for themselves they are entirely conscious. Especially for the task of spiritual science in our time, it is extremely important to know this, because knowledge about the spirit realm that lies beyond the threshold, knowledge about real individualities who are aware of themselves, is not something known only to present-day spiritual science. For it is, in fact, knowledge that is very ancient indeed. In earlier times it was known through the old atavistic art of clairvoyance, but today it is known by other means. One is gradually learning about it. Knowledge about real spirits who are outside the scope of human consciousness, and whose conditions of life are not like those of human beings, although they are in constant contact with them and can seize hold of them in their thinking, feeling, and will, this knowledge has always existed. It is knowledge that was always regarded as the secret possession of certain brotherhoods, who treated it within their circle as a strictly esoteric matter. Why did they treat it as being strictly esoteric? To enter into an explanation of this now would be going too far, but this much can be said. The individual brotherhoods were always honestly of the opinion that the majority of human beings were insufficiently mature to possess this wisdom. And this was, to a large extent, indeed the case. But many other brotherhoods, those we call the brotherhoods of the left-hand path, endeavored to keep this knowledge to themselves also because, when such knowledge is possessed by a small group, it gives that group power over others who do not possess it. And there have always been endeavors aimed at ensuring that certain groups had power over others. This could be done by regarding certain knowledge as an esoteric matter, but then using it to gain power over something else. Today, it is especially necessary to be really clear about these things. As you know, and as I have been telling you in recent lectures, humanity has been living in a very special spiritual situation since 1879. Very specially effective spirits of darkness have been removed from the spiritual world into the physical since 1879. And those who hold the secrets connected with this fact in an unlawful manner, within small groups, are able to do all kinds of mischief with these things. Today I shall begin by showing you how certain secrets connected with the evolution of the present time can be misused. You must then make an effort to bring together what I shall tell you today which is more the historical aspect, with what I shall say about it tomorrow. You all know that for quite a while now, within our anthroposophical stream of spiritual science, attention has been drawn to the fact that the 20th century is one in which a special relationship of human evolution with Christ is to come about. In the 20th century, in fact during the first half, as you know, an event will take place which is also hinted at in the first of my mystery plays, namely that Christ will become, for a sufficiently large number of people, a being who is actually present in the etheric realm. We know that we are now living in the age of materialism. We know that materialism has been reaching its zenith since about the middle of the 19th century. However, the reality is that opposite poles always coincide. The zenith of materialism in human evolution has to coincide with its opposite, namely, an inwardness in human evolution that leads to Christ being indeed seen in the etheric realm. It is understandable that this very announcement about the new relationship which Christ is about to enter into with humanity will be met with upset and aversion amongst those who, as members of certain brotherhoods, want to make use of the knowledge of this 20th century event, this event of the appearance of the etheric Christ, for their own ends, and therefore do not want it to become common knowledge. There are some brotherhoods, and brotherhoods also influence public opinion in ways that people are least likely to notice. There are certain secret brotherhoods who put it about that materialism will soon fizzle out, indeed that it has already fizzled out in some ways. This unfortunate, pitiable, clever in quotation marks, individuals who spread the doctrine in all kinds of meetings, books, and associations, that materialism has run its course, and that comprehension of the spirit is already beginning to dawn, although they are unable to do more than pronounce the word spirit and dole out a few isolated empty phrases, these are the individuals who are more or less serving those who have an interest in putting about something that is untrue, namely that materialism has fizzled out. This is an untruth. For materialism is, on the contrary, still on the increase, and it will flourish best when people delude themselves into believing that they are no longer materialists. Materialism is on the increase, and it will continue being on the increase for another 400 to 500 years. As I have so often stressed here, what is needed now is a clear and conscious awareness of the fact that this is the case. Humanity will remain unscathed if human beings work in their spiritual and cultural life in the knowledge that the fifth post-Atlantean epoch has the task of drawing forth from general human evolution what is materialistic in its essence. But at the same time, this must be countered with an equal degree of what is spiritual in its essence. In previous lectures, I have spoken about what human beings must learn in the fifth post-Atlantean age, namely, to wage a fully conscious battle against the evil that is making its appearance in human evolution. Just as the battle regarding an understanding of birth and death took place during the fourth post-Atlantean age, so is it now time for the battle regarding the understanding of evil. The important thing now is to grasp spiritual teachings in full consciousness, not to throw dust in the eyes of one's contemporaries as though the devil of materialism did not exist. This devil will be very much on the increase. Those who are dealing with these things in a wrong way know about the event of Christ's appearance just as well as I do, but they are treating this event in a different way. To understand why this is, one must pay attention to the following. With humanity as it is in this fifth post-Atlantean age, many people in their indolence utter the entirely unjustified sentence, quote, "What we have to do while we are living here between birth and death is immerse ourselves fully in life. Whether we then enter a spiritual world after passing through death remains to be seen, and meanwhile we can wait. Let us enjoy life as though nothing but a physical world existed. When we step into the spiritual world through death, well, we shall see then whether such a world exists." Close quote. This statement is just about as intelligent as the oath, quote, "As truly as there is a God in heaven, I am an atheist." Close quote. The degree of intelligence in that remark is about the same as in this oath, yet it is how many people think, who say, quote, "We shall see after we die what it is like over there. Meanwhile, there is no need to bother with any kind of spiritual science." Close quote. An attitude of this kind has always been highly questionable, but in our fifth post-Atlantean age, it is particularly fatal, because it is being especially urged upon human beings now through the dominance of evil. The evolutionary conditions that hold sway at present mean that when human beings pass through the gate of death, they take with them the conditions of consciousness which they themselves have created for their own lives between birth and death. Let me just read that sentence again. The evolutionary conditions that hold sway at present mean that when human beings pass through the gate of death, they take with them the conditions of consciousness which they themselves have created for their own lives between birth and death. Those who, under present conditions, concern themselves solely with ideas, concepts, and feelings relating to the physical sense-perceptible world, are condemning themselves to living after death in surroundings to which only the concepts developed during bodily life refer. Whereas those who absorb spiritual ideas enter into the spiritual world in the right way. Those who refuse to absorb spiritual ideas have to remain in a certain way within earthly conditions until, and this takes a long time, they have learned over there to absorb spiritual concepts to a degree in which these can carry them over into the spiritual world. So, our environment over there is determined by whether or not we absorb spiritual concepts here. It has to be said with much pity that many of those who have resisted or been prevented from absorbing spiritual concepts here during life find themselves wandering about on the earth even when they are dead, for they remain bound up with the earthly sphere. And once the human soul is no longer separated from its surroundings by a body that would prevent it from acting in a destructive way, this human soul becomes a focus of destruction within the earthly sphere. It has to be said that this is quite a normal situation. Under today's conditions, souls who enter the spiritual world after death, having wanted to know absolutely nothing about spiritual concepts and feelings, become focuses of destruction because they are detained in the earthly sphere. Only those souls who have already here been filled with a degree of connection with the spiritual world pass through the gate of death in such a way that they are taken up into the spiritual world in the right way and removed from the earthly sphere. They can spin the threads in the right way that link them with those who have remained behind, threads which are continually spun. We must not forget that the spiritual threads linking the dead souls with those of us here who have been connected with them are not sundered by death. They remain and even become much more intimate after death than they were here. What I have been describing must be accepted as a serious and important truth. Once again, the fact that this is how things are at the present time is something known not only to me, but to others as well. There are some who make use of the truth in a really nasty way. Today there are those who have been duped into believing that nothing exists except the material life. But there are also initiates who are materialists and who make sure that brotherhoods spread materialistic teachings. Do not believe that these initiates take the ridiculous view that there is no spirit, or that human beings do not have souls that can be independent of the body and live without it. You may be sure that anyone properly initiated into the spiritual world would not subscribe to the absurd notion of believing only in matter. But there are many who are in one way or another interested in spreading materialism, and who make all kinds of arrangements to ensure that a great part of humanity believes only in materialism and is entirely under the influence of materialism. There are brotherhoods headed by initiates who are interested in cultivating and spreading materialism. These materialists are very well served by all the talk about materialism having already been overcome. Aims can be pursued by opposing words. Indeed, the way of going about things is often quite complicated. So what do those initiates want who know very well that the human soul is a purely spiritual being, which is entirely independent of the body, and who, nevertheless, want to cultivate people's materialistic outlook? These initiates want to ensure that as many souls as possible only take in materialistic thoughts here, between birth and death. By this means, such souls are prepared in a way that forces them to remain within the earth's sphere. They are held within the sphere of the earth. Then consider that brotherhoods are set up who know all about this. These brotherhoods prepare certain human souls in a way that makes them remain in the material realm after death. If these brotherhoods then also bring it about that these souls come within their sphere of influence after death, which may well lie within their villainous power, then that brotherhood gains a huge amount of power. These materialists are not materialists because they do not believe in the spirit. These materialist initiates are not so stupid. They know very well what are the implications of the spirit. But they cause the souls to remain within matter, even after death, in order to make use of them for their own purposes. They create a clientele of dead souls that remain within the sphere of the earth. These dead souls possess forces that can be guided in various ways, which make it possible to gain quite specific powers over those who are not party to such things. This is quite simply something that certain brotherhoods set in train. And this is seen clearly only by those who are not prepared to believe in anything that is obscure or nebulous, and who do not allow themselves to be persuaded either that such brotherhoods do not exist, or that what they do is harmless. These things are not at all harmless. They are very harmful, for the intention is to make human beings go further and further into materialism. What these initiates want is for these human beings to believe that although spiritual forces do exist, they are nothing but forces of nature. Let me now characterize the ideal held by such brotherhoods. You will have to make some effort to understand the matter. Think of an innocuous human world, which has been led astray a little by the prevailing materialistic concepts of today, and which has deviated somewhat from ancient, well-tried religious ideas. Think of an innocuous humanity of this kind. Perhaps it can be depicted graphically. And he makes a drawing. Here is the realm of that innocuous humanity. As I have said, this humanity is not only not quite clear regarding the spiritual world, it has also been led astray by materialism, and does not quite know how to behave as regards the spiritual world. In particular, this humanity does not quite know what to do about those who have passed through the gate of death. So now let us assume that there is the realm of one of those brotherhoods. This brotherhood is spreading the doctrine of materialism and ensuring that these human beings most probably think in a purely materialistic way. By this means, the brotherhood succeeds in generating souls for itself that remain in the earthly sphere after death. They become the spiritual clientele of this lodge. In other words, by this means, dead souls have been created who do not go out of the earthly sphere, but remain with the earth. By making the right arrangements, they can be held within the lodge. So in this way, lodges have been created which contain the living, but also the dead who have become related to the earthly forces. Matters are then directed by these people here, who hold sessions or by means of arranging meetings, like the spiritual seances of the second half of the 19th century, about which I have frequently spoken. It can then happen, and please take note of this, that what goes on here in the sessions is directed by the lodge with the help of the dead. But it is the intention of the masters in those lodges that the people must not know that they are dealing with the dead, for they are meant to believe that what they are dealing with are simply higher forces of nature. The intention is to show people that these are higher forces of nature, psychism and so on, merely higher forces of nature. The concept of the soul as such is taken away, and the people are told, quote, just as there is electricity and magnetism, so are there similar higher forces, close quote. Those who lead the lodge hide the fact that these things are coming from souls. So those other innocuous souls gradually become dependent, psychologically dependent on the lodge, without knowing what they are dependent on or where that which is directing them is coming from. The only defense against these things is knowing about them. If you know about them, you are protected. If you know about them in that you really regard them as true, that you really believe them to be like this, then you are protected. But you must not be idle about acquiring real knowledge about these things. For the present, however, it can still be said that it is not yet absolutely too late regarding this. These things can only be clarified gradually, and I can only slowly gather together the various elements by which you can be given full clarity. But meanwhile, I have often told you that during the second half of the 19th century, many brotherhoods of the West introduced spiritualism as an experiment. They wanted to test whether they had already reached the stage they intended with regard to humanity. It was an experiment to test how far they had progressed with humanity. What they intended and indeed expected was that during spiritualist seances, people should say, quote, higher forces of nature do indeed exist, close quote. But the brothers of the left-hand path were then disappointed when most people said, instead, quote, the spirits of the dead appear during the seances, close quote. This was a bitter disappointment for the initiates, for it was exactly what they did not want. Belief in the dead was the very thing which they wanted to take away from human beings. People were to be deprived not of the workings of the dead, not of the way the forces of the dead worked, but of the thought, that very significant thought, that these things do come from the dead. As you can see, this is a higher form of materialism, a materialism that not only denies the existence of the spirit, but wants to imprison the spirit in matter. Materialism still manifests in ways that make it possible to deny its existence. People can say that materialism is gone and that what we are talking about is spirit. But they all speak about the spirit in a vague way, making all nature into spirit in a way that leads to psychism, as the end result is a very good way of being a materialist. But what really matters is the ability to see into the concrete spiritual world, into concrete spirituality. This, then, is the beginning of something that will become more and more intensive over the coming 5 centuries. The evil brotherhoods have now restricted themselves to this, but they will surely continue in their efforts if we do not put a stop to their handiwork. And the only way to put a stop to it is to overcome our idleness with regard to the world view of spiritual science. In some ways, they rather gave the game away in the spiritualist seances. Instead of covering their tracks, they laid bare their tracks through those spiritualist seances, which showed that their machinations were not yet particularly successful. So then, from the 1890s onward, those very brotherhoods set about discrediting spiritualism for the time being. In short, you can see that by these means, very, very incisive interventions are being made by using the spiritual world. They aim to increase their power and utilize certain conditions of evolution that must obtain during the course of human progress. There is something that is working to counteract the materialization of human souls, the imprisonment of human souls in the sphere of earthliness, where the lodges also have their existence. If the souls are to go about their ghostly work in the lodges, they have to be imprisoned in the earthly sphere. But this endeavor, this impulse to work through these souls in the earthly sphere, is being counteracted by the remarkable impulse of the mystery of Golgotha. This impulse of the mystery of Golgotha provides the universal healing to counteract the materialization of the soul. The pathway of Christ exists entirely outside the will and intentions of human beings. No human being of whatever persuasion, not even an initiate, can influence Christ in doing what leads to his appearance during the course of the 20th century, about which I have often spoken to you, and which you will also find hinted at in the mystery plays. This depends solely on Christ himself. Christ will be present as an etheric being in the sphere of earth. But as to how human beings behave toward him, that will be up to them. No one, not even the mightiest initiate, can have any influence on Christ's appearance as such. Please do remember this. But it is possible to arrange affairs in ways that could lead to this Christ event being received either in one way or in another way, and being effective either in one way or in another way. The brotherhoods I have just mentioned, the ones who want to imprison human souls in the material sphere, are aiming to make Christ's appearance pass by unnoticed in the 20th century. Their aim is to prevent people from noticing his arrival as an etheric individuality. This endeavor is developing under the influence of a specific idea, or rather a specific impulse of will, on behalf of an entirely different being. The brotherhoods want to seize and conquer the sphere of influence that is supposed to come about through Christ in the 20th century and beyond. We shall refer to this in more detail later. There are Western brotherhoods who are striving to deprive Christ of his impulse and put in its place a different individuality, one who has never even been on earth in the flesh, a purely etheric individuality, albeit a strictly Aramonic one. All the measures I have been speaking about, to do with the dead and so on, ultimately all of these serve the aims of distracting human beings from Christ, who passed through the mystery of Golgotha, and of wrangling affairs in ways that will give another individuality dominance over the earth. This battle is entirely real, and not at all a matter of abstractions. It is a battle that aims to put another being in the place belonging to the Christ being for the remainder of the fifth post-Atlantean age, and also for the sixth and the seventh. One of the tasks of a healthy and honest spiritual development will be to exterminate and remove those endeavors which are eminently anti-Christian. Clear insight alone, however, will be able to achieve this. For the brotherhoods will give the name of Christ, the actual name of Christ, to that other being whom they want to make into the ruler. It will therefore be crucial to learn to distinguish between the two true Christ, who this time will also be an individuality not incarnated in the flesh, and that other being who differs from the true Christ in that he has never been incarnated throughout earthly evolution, but whom those brotherhoods now want to install in the place of Christ, who they intend shall pass by unnoticed. So here we have the part of the battle that relates to falsifying the Christ appearance of the 20th century. Those who look only at the surface of life, especially all those superficial discussions about Christ and the Jesus question and so on, they cannot see into the depths. A great deal of fog and hot air is produced in order to distract people from the profounder matters that are really at issue. When theologians have discussions about Christ, there is always from somewhere or other some spiritual influence, so that these people are really helping to promote aims and purposes that are quite different from what they consciously believe. This is what is so dangerous about the concept of the unconscious. Whereas the evil brotherhoods follow their aims very consciously, these things that they follow consciously become what is unconscious in those who get involved in all kinds of superficial discussions. To talk of the unconscious is to bypass the core of the matter, for this so-called unconscious is simply what lies beyond the threshold of ordinary consciousness, and this is the sphere where those who are in the know can develop such things. So you see, this is really one side of the matter which confronts a number of brotherhoods who want to replace the working of Christ by the working of another individuality through arranging everything in favor of achieving this. On the other hand, there are Eastern brotherhoods, especially Indian ones, who also want to interfere in human evolution in a manner no less significant. These Indian brotherhoods are pursuing a different aim. They have never developed esoteric practices by which they can imprison the dead in their realm, in the realm of their lodges. Such things are very far from what they want. But they also do not want the impulse of the mystery of Golgotha to play its part in the evolution of humanity. This is not because they do not have the dead at their disposal, in the way I have described in connection with the Western brotherhoods. They do not want to fight against Christ, who will enter into human evolution as an etheric individuality during the course of the 20th century, by setting up another individuality in his place. To do this, they would need the dead, whom they do not have. What they want to do is deflect interest away from Christ. These Eastern brotherhoods, especially the Indian ones, do not want Christianity to become a force to be reckoned with. They do not want any interest in the real Christ to develop, the real Christ who endured the mystery of Golgotha, and who was on the earth for 3 years in a single incarnation, and who cannot again incarnate on the earth. They do not want to make use of the dead in their lodges. Yet they do also want something different from what they are as living human beings. In these Indian Eastern lodges, use is made of beings that are different from the dead of the Western lodges. When a human being dies, the etheric body is left behind, which very soon separates off after death, as you know. Under normal circumstances, this etheric body is absorbed by the cosmos, and I have shown you in various ways that this process of absorption is complicated. Before the mystery of Golgotha, however, and also after the mystery of Golgotha, especially in Eastern regions, something quite specific was possible. When a human being relinquishes his ether body after death, certain specific beings can enter into it. With these etheric bodies relinquished by human beings, they become etheric beings. So it can happen in Eastern regions that not dead human beings, but all kinds of demonic spirits are caused to dress up in abandoned human ether bodies. And these demonic spirits, clothed in human ether bodies, are then received by the Eastern lodges. The Western lodges have the dead, who are imprisoned in matter. The Eastern lodges of the left-hand path have demonic spirits, that is, spirits who do not belong to earthly evolution, but who creep into earthly evolution by putting on ether bodies laid aside by human beings. Exoterically, this is done by transforming this fact into worship. You know that certain brotherhoods practice the art of calling forth illusions, because when people are unaware of the degree to which illusion is present in reality, they are very easily duped by artificially produced illusions. So, to achieve what is required, it is disguised as worship. Imagine a clan of people who belong together. First of all, as an evil brother, one has to prepare for the ether body of an ancestor to be occupied by a demonic being. Then one says to the members of the clan that they must worship that ancestor. The ancestor is simply the one who has laid aside his ether body, into which demons have been moved by the machinations of the lodge. In other words, one introduces ancestor worship. But the ancestors who are worshipped are merely demonic beings of some kind in the ether body of the real ancestor. The way in which Eastern people look at the world can be turned aside from the mystery of Golgotha by working in the way those Eastern lodges work. The consequence for the Eastern people is then, and perhaps for everyone, for this is after all the aim, that the goal is achieved whereby Christ, who is to move above the earth as an individuality, remains unnoticed. Those who do this do not want to substitute another being for Christ. They simply want the appearance of Christ Jesus to pass unnoticed. In this way, battle is being waged from two directions, against the etheric appearance of the Christ impulse during the course of the 20th century. This is what is really going on around humanity. And whatever happens individually is really always only a consequence of the overall impulses in human evolution. This is why it is so sad when efforts keep being made to persuade people that when the unconscious, the so-called unconscious, works in them, it is the result of repressed love or something similar. Whereas, in fact, the impulse of very conscious spirituality is being brought in to move about amongst humanity from all sides, which, though, remains relatively unconscious if one does not make efforts in one's consciousness to be aware of it. You must add various other facts to all this. People who have ever been well disposed toward human evolution have always reckoned with matters such as the ones we have just been describing. For their part, they have done what was right, and in fact one cannot and may not do much more. One very good place where spiritual life was cultivated during the early centuries of Christianity was Ireland, the island of Ireland. This island was thoroughly protected, more protected than anywhere else on earth, against all kinds of illusions. That is also the reason why so many who disseminated Christianity in those early Christian centuries set out from Ireland. Those spreaders of Christianity all had to bear in mind that they were working amongst naive human beings, for the European humanity amongst whom they were working was naive, and allowances had to be made for their naivety. At the same time, they had to know about and understand the great impulses of humanity. Irish initiates, chiefly, were at work during the 4th and 5th centuries in Central Europe. That is where they began, and they worked to prepare for what must happen in the future. The initiation knowledge that influenced them was that in the 15th century, 1413, the 5th post-Atlantean, age would arrive. This is what influenced them, so they knew that they were having to prepare an entirely new age. And for this new age, humanity had to be protected so that it would remain naive. What was done in those days to ensure that Europe's humanity would be fenced round in order to prevent certain harmful influences from entering? From a knowledgeable and honest quarter, guidance for evolution came that gradually caused the maritime traffic going from the northern countries to America in those olden times to cease. So whereas in those olden times ships sailed to America, especially from Norway, for certain purposes, it was gradually brought about that America was entirely forgotten by the population of Europe, and the connection with Europe, with America, disappeared. In the 15th century, the people of Europe knew nothing about America. Because European humanity had to be protected against influences from America, matters were directed, especially from Rome, in ways that caused the links with America to be lost. Some who were very influential in protecting European humanity against influences from America were those very monks who, as Irish initiates, set out from Ireland to bring Christianity to Europe. In those older times, certain quite specific influences were brought back from America. But at the time when the 5th post-Atlantean epoch was beginning, it was important that the European population remained uninfluenced by America, knew nothing about it, and lived in the belief that no such land existed. It was rediscovered once the 5th post-Atlantean age had begun, as historians tell us. One of the truths that you are surely familiar with is that the history we learn in schools is, frequently, a legend. That America was discovered for the first time in 1492 is a legend, for in fact, that is when it was rediscovered. For a time it had remained so thoroughly hidden as was necessary. We ought to know what the real situation was and what the genuine history is. Namely, that for a period, Europe was fenced round and carefully protected against certain influences that had to be prevented from entering there. Such things show how meaningful it is to regard the so-called unconscious, not as something that is unconscious, but as something that takes place very consciously beyond the threshold of everyday human consciousness. And it is important today that humanity should hear about certain secrets. That is why I have done as much as is possible at the moment to speak quite openly. As you know, in the lectures in Zurich, I even went so far as to explain to people about the degree to which they do not know historical life in their ordinary consciousness, but that in reality they dream it. I said that in reality the content of history is dreamt by people and that their ideas about it will only become healthy once they realize that the content of history is dreamt. It is through things like this that consciousness can gradually be awakened. The way facts manifest shows the truth in this, only one must not overlook it. People are blind and asleep in the way they make their way through facts. They are also blind and asleep in making their way through tragic catastrophes like those of today. Today I wanted to draw your attention to these matters concerning history, and tomorrow I shall speak in more detail. I want to make one more point in connection with all this. Firstly, from all that has been said, you have seen what a tremendous difference there is in the evolution of humanity between the West and the East. Secondly, please take also the following into consideration. Psychoanalysts speak of the subconscious, of the subconscious life of the soul, and so on. But such an indeterminate concept is not the point. The point is the question, what is there beyond the threshold of consciousness? What exists there? There is certainly a great deal down there beneath the threshold of consciousness, but in itself, what is down there is very conscious. However, one must become aware of what it is, that conscious spirituality beyond the threshold of consciousness. One must speak of conscious spirituality beyond the threshold of consciousness, not of unconscious spirituality. One must realize that human beings have a great deal about which they know nothing in their ordinary consciousness. In fact, it would be most awkward if they had to be aware in their ordinary consciousness of all that goes on inside them. Think of how they would cope with eating and drinking if they had to know exactly what takes place physiologically and biologically when food is eaten, and so on. All this takes place in the unconscious, and in all of it, even these purely physiological processes, spiritual forces are at work. But human beings cannot put off eating and drinking until they have learned about all that goes on inside them. Many other things go on inside them as well. In fact, the greater part, indeed, the greatest part of their being is unconscious, or rather subconscious. The remarkable thing is that in every instance, another being takes possession of this subconscious that we carry with us. We are therefore not only a combination of body, soul, and spirit, in which we carry about within our body the soul which is independent of us, for shortly before we are born, another being takes possession of the subconscious parts of our being. This subconscious being accompanies us for the whole length of the journey between birth and death. It enters shortly before we are born and then remains with us. To describe this being that fills the parts of us that do not enter into ordinary consciousness, we can say that it is a very intelligent being, one in which the will resembles the forces of nature. It is a being that is very intelligent and which is endowed with a will that is very like the forces of nature, much more so than is the human will. It has one characteristic which must be emphasized, and that is that it would suffer great danger if under present conditions it were to enter into death together with the human being. Under present conditions, this being cannot share in death, so it absconds shortly before death because it has to save itself. Nevertheless, its endeavor is to arrange human life in such a way that it becomes able to win power over death. For human evolution, it would be terrible if this being that takes possession of the human being were also able to win power over death, if it were able to die with the human being, and in this way enter into those worlds which we enter after death. It always has to take leave of us before we step into the spiritual world after death. But it can find this quite a difficult thing to do, and all kinds of complications can ensue. The fact of the matter is that this being which holds sway entirely in the subconscious is very, very dependent on the earth as a whole organism. The earth is not at all the kind of being presented to us by geologists, mineralogists, or paleontologists, for it is in fact a being full of life. All we see of it is its skeleton. For geologists, mineralogists, and paleontologists present us solely with the mineral part, the bony structure. If that is the only aspect of the earth you know about, then you know more or less as much as you would know about the present distinguished company if you came in here with a special kind of sight that allowed you to see only the bones, the skeletal system. Imagine coming in through the door and seeing rows of skeletons sitting on the seats. Of course, I don't mean to suggest that there is nothing more to you than bones, but if a person could see only bones, it would be as though he were seeing through some kind of X-ray machine. This is all that geologists see of the earth, nothing more than the skeleton. The earth, however, has more than a skeleton, for it is a living organism. And from its center it sends out specific forces to every location, every territory on its surface. Imagine the surface of the earth with an eastern region here and a western one there, to mention only the large-scale situation. The forces sent up out of the earth come from the earth's life organism. When a person lives on the earth at one location or another, it is not, or only indirectly, his soul, his immortal soul, that comes into contact with these forces of the earth. The human being's immortal soul is relatively very independent of earthly conditions. It is only made dependent on these conditions artificially, as I showed you today. But through that other being which takes possession of the human being before birth and has to depart before death, via a detour through that other being, the various forces work especially strongly through racial types and geographical variations. So the geographical and other differences work especially on the double which every human being carries. This is exceedingly significant. Tomorrow we shall see how different effects impinge on this double at different locations on the earth, and what the consequences are. As I told you, it will be necessary for you to make a close connection between what I am telling you today and what I shall say tomorrow, since the one will be barely comprehensible without the other. We must endeavor to understand concepts that take seriously the whole of reality, that reality in which the whole being of the human soul lives. This reality, however, metamorphoses in various ways, and these ways depend greatly on the individual human being. One significant metamorphosis is how, depending on whether they absorb materialistic or spiritual concepts between birth and death, human souls correspondingly tie themselves to the earth, or can enter into the right spheres. Amongst ourselves, we must always have clear concepts about these things. Then we shall also gain the right relationship with the world at large. In fact, we must find such a relationship more and more. For us, it is not merely a matter of some abstract spiritual movement. Our concern is with a spiritual movement that is entirely concrete and that reckons with the spiritual life of a whole accumulation of individuals. For me, it is very satisfying that talks of this kind are especially significant for those amongst us who no longer belong to the physical plane, but who have passed through the gate of death, although they remain our faithful co-members. It is satisfying that such talks are cultivated as a reality that unites us ever more deeply with those of our friends who have departed. I say this because we should today remember with special love the departure of Fräulein Stinde, who was so intimately bound up with our building here, whose impulses were so intimately linked with the impulses of our building, and the anniversary of whose death fell yesterday. The end of Lecture 5.